Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
The suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Good day, Buffalo. I'm Naila Ansari, your guest host for What's Next on WBFO. Today, we're diving into an exciting collaboration between the Community Health Center of Buffalo and Cerebro Neurotech on the launch of the Center for Community Intelligence and AI Innovation. This initiative aims to revolutionize community health through cutting-edge artificial intelligence. Joining me today to discuss this groundbreaking partnership are people dear to me, Dr. LaVon Ansari, CEO of Community Health Center of Buffalo, Paulo Alejandro Cotillo, CEO of Cerebro Neurotech, Chief Medical Director Dr. Keani Davis, and the Chief Technology Officer Christian Bao. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Hey, thanks, good to see you.
Thank you.
That was a handful, so who came up with that title?
Right?
Everybody's pleading the fifth on that one. So I'm going to start with Dr. Ansari. Could you start by sharing what inspired the Community Health Center of Buffalo to partner with Cerebro Neurotech?
Sure. As a federally qualified health center, we actually are grassroots primary care where we have multiple services, dental, adult medicine, pediatrics, behavioral health. And one of the things that we've recognized is that everything is AI. And when I started researching and looking at the data, we are looking at, we have a predominantly African-American population. We have six sites. We're in two counties. Approximately 20,000 patients, 17 different languages. But when we started looking at and researching AI, we see that it's not the average automated technology. AI is with us, is here to stay. And we're going to be left behind. And what some of the research says is that AI, particularly African Americans, probably by the next 5 to 20 years, African Americans will, the wealth gap will increase with AI, where we will could lose $43 billion a year as an African American just on AI alone, and it's advancing in the job space and healthcare. So we're saying we want to get on the grassroots, on the ground, and meeting Paulo and working with Cerebro gives the community itself an opportunity to actually be on the forefront of this AI and have feedback and participation and using the human intellectual ability and talent that we have in the community.
Can we talk a little bit about the strengths of this partnership, particularly for Western New York, Buffalo, and the East Side of Buffalo?
Well, I think I've sort of coined the phrase taking the degrees to the street. As you know, 74% of African Americans don't have college degrees. And most of the intelligentsia of AI is sitting in big systems like hospital systems, universities, and colleges. But most of our people are on the front line, entry level positions. So having the opportunity to have actually Christian and Paulo and working with Dr. Davis and the health center, we actually are bringing the scientists that our community would not normally see to the street so that we can all be able to be part of that global AI technology.
So you mentioned Paulo, and you're with Cerebro Neurotech, which is new to the Buffalo ecosystem, but it also is transforming healthcare. So can you talk a little bit about how Cerebro Neurotech is able to transform healthcare in underserved populations?
Very good question. So Cerebro is a magnificent advanced technology that we've built. At the core of this technology is this mission that we have for inclusivity and equality in representation in AI architectures, right? So we, what I mean by that is that you see that AI is everywhere. People are coining this day and age as the fourth revolution. Industrial revolution is going to change everything. We know that. We've even though AI has been around for decades, right? But what's important about Cerebro coming into our hands now in this time market is that we have to be very intentional as far as building those foundational architectures for AI models. And what I mean by that is that we have to build these learning models with as much diversity and inclusivity as much as possible. And when I talk about these models, these are patients, these are human lives. We need to be able to serve everyone and not just a few pockets of suburbs in the nation. So very intentional as far as building AI foundations in healthcare from the beginning, because usually these kind of research programs happen on the tail end. So that's what we're doing with Cerebro.
Can you talk a little bit about AI, particularly AI in the med tech space? Because it's a buzzword. Yeah. Everyone thinks they know what AI is. Everyone's like artificial intelligence. Yeah. People think robots are going to come and just take over the world. Can you explain a little bit about what AI is and why is it important to have patients of different diverse backgrounds to be a part?
Yeah. Very good question. I think most people don't realize that they interact with AI all the time, every day, with their phones, with their microwaves, their cars, whatever it is, or on their computers. Right. AI, when you define it, it depends on the person. There's multiple definitions in the scientific term and in engineering. We define it as the simulation, the emulating of human intelligence into a machine. And what does that look like? This machine is able to learn, is able to reason and inference, recommend on that. So basic fundamentals of AI, that's what AI is. What makes AI the fourth industrial revolution right now is that we're sitting on, in the internet of, 25 years, 30 years, we're sitting on so much data out there across all sectors. So much data that our human eyes can't even process ourselves. But we're using high computational artificial intelligence models, we're able to take those data sets that we're just sitting on for decades and actually producing actionable insights, in this specific case, in healthcare and neurocognitive diseases. So that's what AI is. But it's not AI unless it does something good for you. Right.
Now, Dr. Davis, I don't know if physicians think it's going to do something good for them. I hear the counter all the time. Physicians, they get a little nervous about AI and they're not really sure how they're going to be able to interact with it and how does it work with them, particularly when it comes to diagnosing different diseases. What excites you most about AI in patient care, particularly with Cerebro?
Right. I got to say, fourth industrial revolution. I like that.
It's big.
It reminds me of like civics class. I didn't do well in that. That's a good question. I think that AI for us in medicine is like a sci-fi thriller, right? It's one of those when you're watching the movie and you don't want to look and you're like, I don't want to look, but you're peeking through your hands. And then at the end, you're like, oh, wow, that was a really good movie, right? That's what AI is like for us. We know that it's there. We know that it can do some amazing things. But just keep in mind, medicine is a very academic, rigorous process that should be able to be reproduced 1,000 times over, right? So we're very used to the scientific method. So AI can be a dirty word for us, right? Mm-hmm. But we know we got to live with it. So I think that, when it comes to medicine, the real question is, how do we use it and how do we get in front of it so that it's not scary? And I think a lot of us have kind of come along like, listen, it's here, right? So how are we going to use it? And the only way I think Where we got it wrong with EMRs, which is our electronic medical records, is that as clinicians, we were not at the table. Love you engineers to death, right? I'm married to one. But the truth is we had a bunch of engineers creating it for us. So when it came to actually applying it, it didn't help us get through our day. It became disruptive innovation. But for the first time with AI, and why this partnership is so important, is that we get a chance to come to the table and we get a chance to partner and help create it from the get-go, so that we know that not only is it technologically sound, but from an applications perspective, it works more like a decision support tool for us. And it helps us to diagnose quicker and faster and more objectively instead of subjectively. And that's really what I think as a clinician we are needing AI to do, is to work with us and not be disruptive innovation, but actually help us get through the day. And this is one of those things that does help us do that.
When it comes to underserved communities, how do you think this collaboration will help us, if you will?
Yeah.
And that's all of us, because we don't necessarily always have access to these different technologies. Even in some of the bigger systems,
right,
it's hard for anyone to get in unless you know someone. So how do you think this partnership, in terms of health equity, will
help? I can kick it off and then you guys can kind of chime in. I look at it as twofold, internally and externally, right? So internally is more, what does it do for patient care, right? So when you think of concussions are, and I start with concussions, but I'm always very clear that, you know, cerebral neurotech has the ability to go way beyond, you know, concussions. I believe in it that much. But concussions, what it is at its most granular level is cellular injury. Something happens and the cells get stunned and they're like, what just happened? And when that cellular injury happens, you get some type of clinical symptom, whether that's either headaches, blurry vision, or you feel a little off. We feel that, and it's transient, and it goes away. That's the reason why we call it a concussion. But internally now, we're able to, we used to just kind of rely on just kind of our own physical exams, right? But what we know is that AI is doing a little better job with the physical exam than we are. That's, but right, you know, I still believe in my stethoscope. But what that allows me to do now is use my physical findings and an objective measurement now, which is something that we didn't do, right? Objective measurements in medicine was based off of experience, right? I've seen a lot of them and I'm able to kind of grade it and put it in these severity categories. But cerebral allows me to diagnose things a lot more accurately and quickly. And so for our community and our patients who come in, a lot of times people are either in domestic violence situations, they fall in at school, or they have, you know, occupations where they hit their head a lot, right? And they just don't realize it. And so now you're able to use that on the patients right in the office. So internally, that's great. Externally is the cultural capital that Cerebro can pour into the community, meaning the exchange of intelligence and the exchange of knowledge. And what Dr. Ansari was talking about earlier about is educating the community so that they are better positioned to have access to some of these jobs that we used to call white collar jobs, right? That's important because that creates financial security for people, things that a lot of times these disinvested communities don't have. They don't have the cultural capital. Sometimes they don't have access to the education in a way that they can comprehend it and then exchange it for a monetary value. And then for more of your newer clinicians coming out, your newer scientists, you have the ability to now do more translational research. And you don't have to be in these huge academic centers to actually do the real research and get it out to the people quickly. So I think that's what I think this partnership can do, both internally and externally.
That's awesome. See, Christian, I'm not letting you sit there quiet. I'm going to get a little bit into into looking into technology. And as a technology leader, there's challenges that come with integrating AI. What do you see as possible concerns in terms of trust and privacy and transparency? And I'll open that to everyone. But I'll start with you, Christian.
Yeah, sure. So I guess Dr. Davis is really sort of starting to touch on it, in the case that I think traditionally with these technology curves of emerging technology coming into play, they've largely been at these larger institutions that were more heavily capitalized and demographically didn't necessarily represent the demographic we see at CHCB. And so as Dr. Davis was talking about with cultural capital, I think what's properly. I think, you know, the concerns around privacy, trust, I would say these are things that are not at all exclusive to AI. They've been prevalent in all technology that we've had for a very long time. And so when I'm looking at this from the perspective of tech, I think the more important question to answer and what we're trying to do with the partnership at CHCB is dig a little bit deeper into trying to actually get the trust of the community, the human capital that's there, make sure that they feel represented, and that, again, as Dr. Davis was saying, that they feel as though they're part of that movement and they're on the ground floor making an impact and getting an opportunity to have their say and put in their bid for where they want things to go. Mm-hmm. Because naturally, technology evolves at such a pace that oftentimes even those of us that are in it feel like we're being left behind. And so I have to imagine that for those that don't even interface with technology, that the fact that we're even talking about AI, I mean, I have, you know, parents and extended family that still have trouble trying to remember the password to open their phone and they'll lock themselves out. So, yeah, I think the disparity is quite large, especially when you sort of get out of your little echo chamber. And I think that's, again, the best thing about this partnership is trying to take tech, which is, I think, traditionally been in sort of an ivory tower of where it gets mm-hmm. built and how it gets moved forward, and try to bring that to the masses in a way where we can sort of play this role of being a liaison between that emerging tech, as Dr. Ansari said, bring the degrees to the streets and just make it more accessible and democratize it for all.
Can you connect a little bit with that, Dr. A?
Sure. I think the traditional model of community engagement is not going to work with AI, right? Because right now we say we are doing health equity, quote unquote, if we get some people from the community to participate in these larger systems. But AI is not, the technology is not going to, that model will not work with AI because the community is using stuff, but they don't know how they're using it. And we're going to be communicating differently with them, right? And so I think I'm looking at a community institution versus community, the community, current community engagement. We do go right now, we go table in the community. We do, you know, we say we were in the community. No. So as a Fairly Qualified Health Center, we are an anchor. Mm-hmm. So as an anchor, and as this technology advances, we have to share it because the people are not mostly in our walls. They're outside of our walls. So AI is taking it further and further away from us, just depending on ourselves in those walls. So that's why I'm saying that when the question of grassroots community engagement and in this equity space, AI has the ability to bring wealth into communities that are underserved if they're part on the ground. And we have to build those models. So the relationship and the partnership with Cerebro and the Health Center, we're actually building a community model where the community is involved actively in AI, in the AI space.
And what's great is sometimes we hear the word community and we think less than. And that's what I love about this partnership is that it's allowing the community to be up there with all the other institutions and be able to have that access without just being second, third, fourth right. tier. Mm-hmm. Now with that, how do we get the community to trust? Because part of the partnership is also beta testing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times our folks in the community have not had access or understood why we need to be in part of these research different initiatives and different projects. Can you speak a little bit about that? How can we get our folks to understand that the community also needs to situate itself up there with these bigger institutions, bigger hospital systems, bigger universities that are doing the test and understand why the test is important? But given our history in the community of you know, people using our data for, you know, various purposes that we didn't know about, mm-hmm. how can we leverage that and understand the importance?
Sure. I guess I'll jump in and comment that I think if we take a look at the comment you just mentioned, I think the groups that had access to the data, it's no different than the access that everyone else here had to the data. It's just that they knew how to use the tools to be able to get what they wanted and needed out of the data. And so going back to what was mentioned, I think part of it is, and again, what's great about the CCAII that's been done now is it's trying to establish more of an organization or a grassroots cause where the source is, for the most part, because I think naturally in partnering with a group that's outside and saying, okay, let's do this partnership, we'll share some of our stuff, you share some of your stuff, that naturally there's a bit of a disassociation between that because it's not really there on the ground. And so they'll say that the benefits are downstream, but it really doesn't trickle down that way. And naturally, as you said, I think the outcomes for them far outweigh the outcomes for the group where like that stuff's being taken from. So in this particular case, trying to incorporate AI, getting people more involved, part of that effort is the educational component, because the premise is that with not just AI, but all technology, it is generally, I say this with a little bit of a footnote, it's usually culturally agnostic, demographically agnostic, it's industry agnostic, platform agnostic. Tech is what tech is, and naturally it's a tool, and ultimately it's how people intend to use it. There is a power difference between those that know how to wield it and those that don't, again, mm-hmm. drawing the analogy of a tool. And I think that's what we're wanting and trying to bring back is trying to equip the individuals here locally in the Buffalo community with the knowledge of how to also use that tool. So when they have access to the same or similar things, that they'll be able to generate some of their own outcomes, which can compete or at least do better for the local community instead of looking outside for it.
I want to add to that, actually. And that's a very good point as far as, you know, building within this intention with Cerebro. Mm-hmm. And how are we going to have link that bridge to the community? I think fundamentally at a high level, we need to show everyone that brilliance doesn't come from people that look like Bill Gates or Sam Altman, just those folks, right? Brilliance can come from anyone, everywhere. And with Cerebro being very intentional in these beta sites, who we have on the team, who we have representing our mission statement, that we're all Black and brown folks, we're building this from the ground up. I mean, it's the first of its kind to do. And I think what I'm hoping the community sees is that we could do it too. We could make mm-hmm. these new markets. We could build new innovations. We could make the future's next trillion-dollar markets ourselves, right? And it doesn't matter where you were born or what zip code you live in. It's we're building it to represent us.
Dr. Davis, can you speak a little bit to the folks out there on why it's important for us to be a part of these different beta tests?
Yeah, I think we see it a lot of times in medicine that I can have different reference ranges, but when I'm seeing a patient, I'm like, okay, well, you weren't really included in that test, so, you know, we just going to take it for
Yeah, this
you know,
may not work for
you. Yeah, this may not work for you, but we're going to roll with it, though, right? Like, I mean, and I see that a lot, right? Or I'm going to give you this medication. Here's the risk, the benefits, da-da-da-da. Okay, well, then you might have that one person like, well, how does it work in women? How does it work in, you know, African American, right? So that is that's more common than not. So it's important. I always say, if you want to get better, then you got to be a part of it. It's just that simple, right? And so if you want solutions for you, for yourself, then you got to be a part of those solutions. And I will say, to kind of go back with, you know, what you guys were saying, I think the demographics have changed and shifted, right? With the invention of the internet, I mean, when you look at the millennials and you look at Gen Zs, all they know is technology, right? So it's not as scary to them as it is the baby boomers, right? And one of the things that I think you guys did an excellent job, if I haven't given you guys your flowers, I want to give it in front of all of NPR. The way you guys designed it, you designed it as something that's very familiar to people, right? Mm-hmm. The VR headset, it looks like a video game, right? So it's not foreign, right? It's not like if I was trying to give somebody medication versus a placebo, where I'm going to say, take this pill. You don't know what it is. You don't know what's in it. You don't know how much it is. But trust me, I'm a doctor, right? This is different, right? And so I think because it's so familiar to everybody's everyday life, that's important. The uptake on it becomes a little easier. The next thing is, and why it's important for the community, is let's say you come in and you use it. and somebody has a question like, how does this work? I don't know. Let me get the people who made it, right? So you can actually talk to the people. And that those simple conversations strike up curiosity in people who probably didn't know what it was or never thought that they can go down, you know, the STEM pathway. But it's important for us to be involved, because what I've learned just, you know, from the small time of being involved, you know, from the time I came in to now, is that every question makes it better, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, no question I make makes the technology or device part better, because I can barely turn anything on. But at least the applications of it, it changes their thought process. And I think that's what's so great about the diversity, you know, around here. It's a diversity of thoughts, it's a diversity of walks of life, and diversity of questions that just makes the product so much better.
Awesome. Well, stay with us as we continue to explore how AI is reshaping healthcare in Buffalo and beyond. Coming up, we'll discuss the real-world applications and benefits of this collaboration. You're listening to WBFO's What's Next. We'll be right back.
Discover the intersection of musical expression and emotional introspection. Listen to Mindful Music, hosted by mental health care worker Carl Shallowhorn, Saturdays at 4 p.m. and Sundays at 8 p.m. on WBFO.
This is Jack Cruiser with The Scoreboard on WBFO. Listen during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the latest on pro matchups and college rivalries, as well as standout local athletes from Western New York and Southern Ontario. Want more? Listen to a longer version of The Scoreboard at WBFO.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBFO Disabilities Beat brings you powerful stories from members of the disability community. Each week, hear their perspectives on barriers our community faces and the steps we must take to make Western New York more equitable. Listen Wednesdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered, or check out the transcripts, plain language descriptions, and audio for every episode at WBFO.org/disabilities. Because, as the disability community says, there should be nothing done about us without us.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
And we're back to What's Next. I'm guest host Naila Ansari, and we're talking to Dr. LaVon Ansari, the CEO of Community Health Center of Buffalo, Dr. Keani Davis, the Chief Medical Director of the Community Health Center of Buffalo, the CEO of Cerebro Neurotech, Paulo Alejandro Cotillo, and the CTO of Cerebro Neurotech, Christian Bao. Welcome back, you all. And I want to connect a little bit on the partnerships that Cerebro already has. So for you all to come to Buffalo is a pretty big deal, because you've all kind of made strides other places. So we're excited that you all are here. But can you tell us a little bit about where you've been and what other partnerships and beta testing sites you have?
Yeah, so where we've been, it seems like it's been 10 years going at this already, but it's been 2 years. But we've been moving very fast. Back in 2022, we graduated from TechStars Washington, D.C. program, which is a technology startup accelerator. We then went into a program called the Prosper Health Tech Accelerator, another health-focused tech startup accelerator in Birmingham, Alabama. There we met some of the executives at Blue Cross Blue Shield. We told them our story and what we were looking to do, and they wrote us a $500,000 check to get this stood up and get going. So what that means for us is that we could continue our research, but more importantly, we could execute on that research and derive at one, go to market, but to reach actionable insights on actually making a product instead of a concept that this could do potentially this and that. But I just lost my train of thought. What was the question again?
Where are your partnerships?
Oh, our partnerships. Yeah, our partnerships. So, yes. Obviously, here with the Community Health Center of Buffalo, about 27,000 patients, 27,000 patient visits. Very, very representative, and the right demographic variables that we want to collect. We're also working with some schools in Birmingham, UAB. Hopefully we'll be in Children's Health, one of the largest children's hospital in the nation, one of the oldest in Birmingham. Another institution we're working with is called the Lakeshore Foundation. And the Lakeshore Foundation is something very special, a very unknown gem. The Lakeshore Foundation is a sports and research institution for people with disabilities, PWD. And so why I love this partnership with Lakeshore is that Lakeshore Foundation usually, and they actually only, they only partner with large institutions, not little small startups like Cerebro. They work with like Nike and Apple in developing their algorithms for their Apple Watch. Obviously, like the algorithms for a able-bodied person, like someone standing up that can be able to stand, is very different from someone in a wheelchair or sitting down, right? Those type of research topics improve these technologies for better use. So with our presence in a very few select places, but very intentional, very impactful place, my goal with this stage of Cerebro is to be able to scale it across the country, across every ER, every primary care clinic, every urgent care emergency room, et cetera.
You mentioned Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is a huge insurance company, and I know we might have some folks that are uninsured. So can you talk a little bit about the Community Health Center of Buffalo, federally qualified health centers, and what is the connection in terms of folks that might be uninsured, they want to be a part of this, they don't know how they can be, something might happen. Can you talk a little bit about what the health center does?
Well, part of being a federally qualified health center is that we have to take you whether you're able to pay or not. So it's on a sliding fee scale. But the goal is to be able to give affordable health care to a community, whether you have insurance or not. So Cerebro would not cost them anything. Particularly, we're also in the beta testing stage. So it's a tool that Dr. Davis and her team will use, but it will not cost the patient anything.
That's awesome to know, because we know healthcare is a touchy, difficult subject right now in the country. So to know that, I think will be helpful to a lot of our listeners. Mm-hmm. Dr. Davis, you know, we talked a lot about AI and possibly other diseases and early detection and what this tool can possibly do and the education of it. How do you envision these tools making medical visits easier and more personalized?
Anything that gets me the quickest answer, so I can, so I don't gotta mull over it. I'm all for it.
Right, we only get to see the doctors like 5 minutes when we have a visit, right?
In and out. No, it's because of all the disruptive innovation. I'll explain. I think that how will we use it, right? And I think it's a decision support tool. And I think whether people are in healthcare or not, sometimes they don't realize we use decision support tools all the time, because I think, like we were talking about, your data has been out there forever, right? Yeah. And if it's not yours, it's some aggregate data that some really smart person looked at the data and said, hey, I wonder what's the probability of this person having X disease with Y symptom, right? And so we develop these decision support tools. So this is definitely one of those things. But what it allows me to do is get timely and accurate diagnoses quickly. Because one thing we do know about concussions is that the quicker I can diagnose it, the quicker I can manage and treat it. And that's always Dr. Davis's 101 when I'm teaching residents and medical students, is that you can't treat what you can't diagnose, mm-hmm. right? So you got to have a systematic thought process of how you're going to roll things out. So this has the ability to do this. But being in the beta testing part, I love inclusion criteria because I love the scientific method. However, I love the device, so I just throwing all kinds of people on, right? Because I want to see what it's going to say. Mm-hmm. But I think it's great because we get a chance to see what does cellular level injury look like in depression? What does it look like in insomnia? What does it look like in Alzheimer's? And all these different really cool things that I can't wait that they get to, because I know they're going to get there. But this is going to open up a whole new world. And then with them being so intentional about who they use it on and who they test it on, I've got a whole new world of people who are included in tests that normally weren't included.
And so you talk about your inclusion, which makes things accessible. I'm going to talk to and shift over to Paulo in terms of AI. What steps are you all taking to ensure the technology is user-friendly and accessible?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. On the design and engineering level, we want to build this putting ourselves in the user's perspective, right? If there's too many clicks, we're not going to do this. If it's
hard. Thank you. Yeah. Say that for the people in the back. Yes. If it's too many clicks, we're not going to do it.
That's exactly right. So minimizing the clicks, and the clicks are metaphors for stages or inputs that we have to get to where we want to be. You know, right now it's even hard to get these appointments with your PCPs or a specialist. What I'm getting to is that we've intentionally built Cerebro to be as invasive as possible. It's almost plug and play, so that there are no distractions, inhibitions to use our technology. Just for example, like no one wants to buy a $10,000 microwave that just sits collecting dust, right? No one's benefiting from that. Right, so we want to use Cerebro to be one complementary to the existing clinical workflows to make it easier for folks like Dr. Davis and Dr. A to be able to execute their jobs faster. And what that means is that you could potentially see much more patients in your day. You could have smarter outcomes from looking at the data sets. But the goal here is to make this as plug and play as possible so that the user doesn't have to worry about how does this work? What am I doing right now? Right? And if we put that user in that position where it's non-invasive, it's totally just plug and play, there is no reason why this should not be used in every clinical setting at all.
Christian, are there plans to introduce apps or tools that patients can use outside the clinical visits?
Yeah, sure. So we'll paint a picture for the listener in terms of how it works right now. So you can imagine you walk in as a patient, you need to use Cerebro, and maybe you potentially or think that you might have an acute concussion. And so what happens is when you walk into the doctor's office, they'll put on a VR headset for you, and that's it. There's no controllers for you. You don't have to push any buttons. There's nothing for you to do. You sit there with a headset. The clinician on their side has a separate application they access, and from there they control the entire experience so that it is entirely hands-off and hands-free for the person. For the clinician, it's probably about 3 or 4 clicks that'll kick off the experience. It's currently a 60-second battery test that's done inside the headset. As Dr. Davis mentioned earlier, we went through the medium of games, because as was mentioned, younger demographics are kind of growing up in that era, and so it's not foreign to them. And one other thing we found is that with games, even the older demographic, despite maybe not having been exposed to games, I think we all recognize that play is instinctual, and when they get inside of a game, and certainly when there's an aspect of potentially competition, they really just sort of step in and really lean into it. And the nice thing about the game as a medium is that with it being a 60-second test, by the time they recognize what they're doing, the test is already over. And at that point, we've collected probably 100,000 plus data points with only eye tracking to be able to then, identify probability of diagnosis. So with the experience after that, headset comes off, it's done, and then there you'd have your clinician to be able to give a definitive diagnosis from that point. Again, as was mentioned, mm-hmm. It is a clinical decision support tool, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Love that.
And so as for applications, a question that comes up is, okay, VR headset, it's great, but what then from there? And mm-hmm. currently that is something that is a large, not concern for us, but we recognize it's something we need to solve. Currently at the beta sites, there are virtual reality headsets there, so that way they're accessible to patients. But naturally, as we've been talking about, even just accessibility to the health center itself is not always a luxury. We want to be able to reach people where they are, across all demographics. And so we're working on expanding that sort of test itself to be embedded inside of a mobile application so it can go onto mobile devices. That way we can increase the distribution in terms of how many people can access it and use it. And then from there, just having that information be beamed back up to someone like Dr. Davis that can then, again, make the final decision. And ultimately, it's not meant at all to replace any clinicians or doctors. Again, decision support tools. So we're just looking to give a little bit more insight as to the alternative, which is, I've hit my head, let me just lick my finger, put it in the air, and see if I need to do something about it.
Well, you mentioned video games, and my 9-year-old is obsessed with Fortnite. Like, we had this discussion, okay, teaching me about skins. So the Center of Community Intelligence and AI Innovation, you're talking about developing programs and different workshops, but I know you talked about video games and the importance that it's not just what, you know, what my son Noah is doing, just, you know, playing, calling his friends to go against each other, battling. Yeah. You can use video games for so many other things. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So one of the considerations that we've been thinking about for video games at the CHCB is trying to get more young people involved in understanding things like depression, trauma, and other concepts. And one of the unique things about games as a medium is that if you think about reading a book or watching a movie, you can empathize with something, but ultimately the actions that result in that book or movie, you still have some disassociation between it because they're not the consequences of your actions. And so, again, you can empathize, but it's sometimes difficult to internalize if you have not had that experience yourself. And that's the unique thing about games, is games as a medium, they give you, as the player, just enough agency to put you in charge. And they have the illusion of choice and the illusion of control. So the person thinks that they're in control and they're making all the choices. Naturally, a game is designed in such a way where there's usually linear branching paths, but they'll eventually sort of converge. But what's neat about that is in the brain, of course, I think that I'm taking the action because I did this action. This thing happened as a result. I connect those two things and it was me. What that enables, especially with young kids, is there are very few pathways at all, I think, which games provide, where in a game, kids can explore, I mean, anyone, we're talking about kids specifically, though, they can explore complex emotional and social dynamics in a game because it's a consequence-free environment where they're able to observe all the, you know, consequences or benefits of the actions they take. And inherently, games do something interesting because there's always the joke that, you know, my little kid can't, you know, sit in a classroom and focus for more than 30 minutes, but he'll go to that console and he'll play for 8 hours straight, right? There's a reason why. It goes back to these kids having just enough agency to feel that they're in control. And, you know, in games, they face challenges all the time. It's not like they play a game and they are the best or they are perfect, right? And so what's fascinating is it's not that they're opposed or allergic to challenge or hardships. It's just, again, games provide this really nice opportunity for them to do so in a way that's progressive, contextually specific to them. It scales with them and their levels of where they're at. They're able to sort of be their own champion versus sort of being part of a conglomerate.
So now that you convince all of us not to be yelling at our kids for playing video games anymore, I have to reconsider my screaming tactics at our kids. So, Dr. A, how did you decide? And you know, you're a grandmother. You've been in the field for a long time. I'm not going anywhere extra with your age by any means. I'm not doing that. But a lot of times, a lot of our seniors, our elders, don't like video games. Mm-hmm. And this is a pretty big innovative idea. What made you want to go forward and connect with Cerebro?
Thinking of the future, thinking of you all, that as a leader, we have to always think about strategies to advance, for me, to advance in the community and to share whatever we have. So I've been able to think about, blessed with all this talent, and I'm saying, well, how do I bring it together so the community can benefit from it? So that's my job, for where I sit as a leader in the community, but also as I sit as a mother and a grandmother and a parent, I'm looking ahead of us because I got more time in the back of me than I have in the front of me. So I want to capitalize on as much as I possibly can for all of you all to be able to move this forward. But in the meantime, we have to lay the groundwork. So this is going to be unique in a sense that nobody's thinking about how AI gets planted and rooted in communities. They talk about it and they say that we're in the community, but are you really in the community? So that's why I thought about how do I take all of the talent that I have around me and have access to and put it together so that it has a future.
So this question is going to be for everyone. What are your main goals for the first year of this partnership and what does success look like?
Well, we've been working together for about a year. So the next phase is to actually have this community-based AI planted and that Buffalo knows that it exists and that we start building the community interests. And not only just from Buffalo, but nationally and locally, how the community and AI is rooted not just as a consumer, but also as an institute.
Dr. Davis?
Yeah. I would say in the first year, my goal would be to root Cerebro Neurotech and AI within the center from a strong research base as it relates to clinical and translational research, because I think that if you can create the data lake, we call it, you can explore all the untapped abilities of Cerebro. So to create a strong research foundation that will allow us to ask clinical questions as well as do translational research is my first go round this year.
Yeah. So I'm going to, there's a different way. There's many ways to answer that. Like there's many goals we could go to quantifying how many patient body size and all those type of things. But I want to answer that from the perspective of a entrepreneur, a founder, a tech startup. About 2 years ago, I wrote down this very high conceptual hypothesis thought on a piece of paper, and I circulated it around with my peers and obviously my partner here, Christian Bao, and said, this is something, there's something here, this concept to be built. What my goal with this, and I'm astonished with this, is that people actually want to use this device that we've built, this new an innovation. That makes me happy as a founder because we're obviously, it feels like we're creating something of value that the community can obtain value from. You don't want to be working on deep technologies that aren't good for any reason, right? Like it's going to be actually be used. That gets me most excited that, this is not just a social platform or a marketplace for e-commerce. This is something a little bit more generational. This will absolutely transform how we practice medicine, how we play sports, how we understand the most complex architecture in human existence, the brain. So the it's endless, I think. There's so much more to do, and I think we're going to find ourselves in a bewildered state in a couple of years and say, how do we get this done? How do we do this? And we're going to replicate that to our beta sites and all across the nation.
Christian?
Yeah, great. I'm going to agree with Dr. Davis. I mean, I think in the first year on the clinical research side is vastly important. We were just talking about, for the most part, how there's not necessarily, like, you know, in medical field, we'll talk about standards for tests and whatnot. But of course, we all know that those standards weren't necessarily built on the demographic that we're talking about that represents Buffalo and the Community Health Center of Buffalo. And so for me, that first year of the beta site, getting all that data in to make sure that we have a good representational body of information and data. So when we are advancing these models, when we're building new tests, new experiences, that again, that is at the forefront, and we're building it with that demographic in mind. Also, looking out from there, currently the application that we use eye tracking because it's focused on concussions, and we're able to garner a lot of information from that. But further down the line, we're looking at definitely expanding out to capture other types of biomarkers as it relates to facial movement, as it relates to voice analysis. And we can then, thinking that we can start to cross-reference some of these to be able to identify other neurocognitive diseases. But again, as we're thinking about that, the most important part is, again, the data that that is trained on. Because ultimately, in order to get to that point, we're going to rely on these models. These models had to be trained on data. The data informs the experiences of the model and what it's looking at. And so, again, agree with Dr. Davis wholeheartedly that most important part, certainly this first year, is getting all of the data for clinical research to make sure that the data is forethought in what's being built, and we're not trying to sort of shove it all in after.
That's wonderful. Dr. Ansari, are there plans to offer workshops or training programs for the public, and which populations do you want to target?
All of them. Well, if you look at if you look at my staff in particular, that frontline customer service staff, AI is really going to overtake it. It's going to overtake. So we need to upscale and upskill those of us that are sitting in those frontline targeted positions. So my goal, particularly as the leader in the health center, is really how to scale up my staff and be a model for it. Because we, like Paolo said, we're using AI all the time, but my staff, I can tell you, my staff doesn't know what it does. It doesn't, they don't know how to use it. So all of us are going to have to figure out how we educate this digital literacy for the communities that we serve that are not exposed to it. So that's really what I'm looking at, is how to better our workforce and keep up with the AI technology.
And Paolo, how do you see this model influencing the future of healthcare nationwide?
Nationwide.
You're in Alabama already, so we're like almost there.
How do they scale it nationwide? I think, you know, what's important to us at Cerebro is to get this right from the beginning, and with great intent of the outcome that we want to achieve. And what I mean by that is that, you know, this technology, we could put it in 10,000 hands tomorrow, right? But right now we're putting it in just select few beta sites so that, one, we could continue to refine those bugs in the product. And once we know that it could work here in CHCB in Western New York and across the FQHCs in New York, in Alabama and Washington, D.C., I think people will want to be a part of this. Even if you're looking at it as a capitalist or a business, I mean, this is a revenue-generating product for hospitals. The payers are already interested in this ecosystem. This has to be just embedded in the existing workflows of healthcare right now. And we've made it that way, so it's not so exotic, it's not so foreign. It's just like, why didn't we think about this years ago? We needed this years ago, right?
So I'm gonna do a why as we close out here. Why the Center for Community Intelligence and AI Innovation, why would someone want to participate in the center?
Very simply, because we need it and it's already gone past it.
Mic drop. Yeah.
Dr. Davis?
AI is always going to be the other person in the room, right? Whether you like it or not. If there's two people in the room, the third person is AI. If there's one, AI is the second part. So there's no other thing that's been this innovative that you can be a part of shaping. So if it's already going to be the next person in the room, you might as well begin to shape it.
Yeah, excellent. From my perspective, I think, let me hone into what Dr. A mentioned, is that this is scarcity. This is like what I mentioned about the fourth industrial revolution. AI technologies are multiplying at a increased compounding rate every second. Mm-hmm. If we don't include these communities from the beginning, from the ground up, a bottom-up versus top-down approach, that creates a widely growing disparity across economics, workforce development, et cetera. So what this all means to me is that we need to get in the front of this versus waiting at the back of the line to capture any of this value from this new innovation.
And Christian, we're going to close out with you.
Sure. The least social person here. I would say the why for everyone caring. I mean, really, it's 2024. This tech is not new. It still hasn't happened. And so we're here trying to make it happen. And I think, by way of what we're already doing, the strides we're already making, we're already going down that path. So really just want everyone to be involved, get on at the grassroots level and be part of something, I would say even generational for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you to our guests, Dr. Levon Ansari, Paulo Alejandro Cotillo, Dr. Keani Davis, and Christian Bao for sharing your insights. The Center for Community Intelligence and AI Innovation is truly a bold step forward for Buffalo. And we thank you, our listeners, for tuning in to WBFO's What's Next. Until next time, I'm Naila Ansari. Have a great day, Buffalo.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.